Nu fortæller to afrikanske flygtninge i Italien til den anden radio om deres rejse til Europa. Om turen gennem ørkenen og de libyske fængsler. Om redningen på åbent hav i Middelhavet. Noah og Agnete Metz har talt med de to i programmet Den længste rejse.
Ikke siden 2. verdenskrig har der globalt været så mange mennesker på flugt. Ifølge tal fra FN's højkommissariat for flygtninge drejer det sig på nuværende tidspunkt om ca. 59,5 millioner mennesker. Langt størstedelen af disse befinder sig i de såkaldte nærområder, mens en lille procentdel finder vej over Europas grænser. Det gælder både for Afrika og Asien, at hvor der i gamle dage var langdistancehandelsruter, er der nu etableret en regulær menneskehandel, hvor såkaldte traffickers med meget høje profitmarginer fører folk væk fra krigszoner og ekstrem fattigdom. Det er især borgerkrigen i Syrien og situationen i Afghanistan, men også væbnede konflikter og militærdiktaturer i Afrika, der sender folk på flugt. Siden 2013 har der været en skarp stigning af asylansøgere i Europa, og mange af dem, der er kommet i de sidste år, kom over Middelhavet. 219.000 mennesker kom den vej i 2014, heraf 178.000 til Italien. Langt størstedelen af disse fortsatte derefter ind i Schengen-området. Det er en farlig tur over havet, hvor de rejsende risikerer at omkomme i overfyldte gamle både, og hvor de ofte udsættes for vold og andre former for overgreb af de såkaldte traffickers. Vi hører om disse migrationsruter i medierne, og vi hører mange tal. Men det kan være svært at relatere til det menneskelige drama, der ligger bag den enkeltes rejse. I denne udsendelse vil vi følge Simi og Sulay. En dreng og en ung mand fra henholdsvis Gambia og Niger, som begge har taget den farefulde rejse til Europa og på vejen overlevet Libyens fængsler, før de nåede sikkerhed på europæisk jord. Men hvordan gør man, hvis man er et fattigt, desperat menneske i Afrika, der gerne vil nå et sikkert land? Vi er taget til et asylcenter en time nord for Rom i landsbyen Poggio Mirteto, højt oppe i Sabinerbjergene. Her har Sulay og Simi inviteret den anden radio ind for at fortælle om deres rejser, om overlevelse. Ikke kun om turen over Middelhavet, men også om opholdet i de libyske fængsler og i Sulays tilfælde om at skulle igennem ørkenen. Vi begynder med den 17-årige Simi, hvis rigtige navn ikke er Simi, men som vi ikke kan afsløre her af hensyn til hans families sikkerhed. Simi er blevet tilkendt politisk asyl i Italien efter at være flygtet fra Gambia. Han kom fra en bondefamilie, der dyrker ris på bredderne af Gambias store flod af samme navn, men han selv er et stort fodboldtalent, og allerede som 16-årig var han ansat som professionel fodboldspiller på et af statens fodboldhold og i stand til at forsørge sin familie. Men Gambia er et militærdiktatur, og en af Simis tætte familiemedlemmer er en kendt modstander af regimet, en demokrati- og borgerrettighedsforkæmper. Simi holder meget af dette familiemedlem, og hans store fejl, set i styrets øjne, var at komme til at blive set i selskab med denne systemkritiker. Det var nok til at dømme ham uden rettergang til en usikker skæbne. For at redde sit liv flygtede han alene ind i Senegal. Men det, at han i Gambia var et kendt ansigt, berømmet for sit fodboldtalent, gjorde, at gambianere i Senegal genkendte ham og begyndte at stille spørgsmål til hans situation. Han var bange for, at regimets lange arme kunne nå ind i Senegal.
You know, Senegal, I even want to try and stay there and play football. But I see many people saw me there and they all know me. They used to ask me why you leave the country. We heard that you have this problem and this problem. So I don't comfortable in Senegal anymore. I leave Senegal, I came to Mali. And I don't know Mali very well. I don't comfortable in Mali. Even the food they eat, I don't used to eat it. I don't comfortable in Mali. After I leave Mali, I came to Burkina Faso. I have no money to stay in Burkina Faso. Everything is money. Even you want to take bath, you have to buy water. You will drink, you have to buy water. I came to Niger, the same thing, the same problem. After I saw people came to Libya with their different problems, they told me that you can play football, and Libya, Arab people, they pay good money. So if you go to Libya, maybe you will comfortable there if you have a team. So I decided to go to Libya so that I can play football there. So I go to Libya, I start training. There is one team, They saw me. They want me to play for them. After they said they will sign me. So after the war started again, so they came to tell me that although it cannot possible because here is a war again. So I decided to cross to come to Italy. After my first trip, they catch us in the sea.
Simi blev altså taget til fange af en af Libyens militser, da han forsøgte at krydse Middelhavet første gang. Vi vender tilbage til hans historie, men først skal vi til Niger. Niger er et af verdens allerfattigste lande, og det er herfra Sulay, en dengang 22-årig ung mand uden nogen jobmuligheder, beslutter sig for at prøve lykken og rejse med en ven nordpå. Ligesom Simi har han på dette tidspunkt ikke nogen idé om at skulle til Europa. For ham er målet at komme til det første det bedste land, der giver ham mulighed for at arbejde og skabe sig et liv. Og det tror han kan få i Libyen. Men for at komme til Libyen skal han først rejse gennem ørkenen. En 5-dages tur i helvede, der viser sig at være meget farligere, end hvad han troede. Det er sjældent, at fund af menneskelig i den afrikanske ørken når frem til nordeuropæiske medier. Men ørkenvejen mellem Libyen og Niger er efterhånden strøget med resterne af menneskelig i alle aldre.
It took 1 week to arrive. We spent 5 days on the desert. I went with a friend. Our land is almost the desert land. They just come used to it. But there are some people that doesn't get it easy. Like the Nigerians and the other West Africans. They don't get it easy because when we were coming, many of them, at least, like five of them died. And we come in the desert, and they just throw them on the sand and leave them and tear away.
Because of the dehydration.
Yeah, because of the dehydration, and you know, they cannot take the dead bodies and put in the car. It's because of the pressure. Because it's not something like a good car or something like that. It's just behind the pickup, and the sun, the heat of the sun, and the dust and the other things, and maybe when the car is running very fast, if you're not very strong, you're gonna fall out from the car and nobody's going to stop to pick you up.
So if somebody falls from the car,
yeah,
they don't stop?
No.
How many people were you in the car?
25, I think. 25. We are 25 in the car. And then we are like 20 at the back of the car, and the rest are in the car, in the front of the car. We are in the Toyota Hilux.
What?
Toyota Hilux.
A pickup truck.
A pickup, yeah.
So it took you 5 days to cross the desert by car.
Yeah.
En af grundene til, at rejsen gennem ørkenen er så forfærdelig, er, at de rejsende ikke får lov at tage nok vand med. Med temperaturer på over 40 grader kan et menneskeliv måles og vejes i de såkaldte gallons af vand, som man får lov at tage med.
They don't allow you to take a lot of water because they say there is no space in the car to keep it. So you don't take a lot of water. So some people also, their problem is water. They die out of thirsty. Because there's no water, but the drivers, they have their own personal water. And even when you are dying, they don't give you because it's for them. It's their own person. And maybe they have guns with them. If you want to, like, do like you want to fight with them, for them to give you their water, they just shoot you. So people don't even go close to them. When they say no, it's no. And they say yes, it's yes. Some of the drivers, they used to take some people and leave them in the middle of the desert and just go away.
Did you see them leave some people and go away?
Yeah. Even this recently, I was here, I heard one of my friends in Niger told me they leave some people about almost to 50 people. All the drivers left them. Then the majority is women and children. They left them in the desert. If you're not strong, you're going to die. But if you're strong, you can walk in the desert because it's not easy to walk in it.
So, on your arrival to Libya, what happened?
Yeah, on my arrival to Libya, the rebels of Libya, they kidnapped us and took us to a distant cell.
Både Simi og Sulay valgte altså at tage til Libyen, fordi det var det nærmeste land, der gav mulighed for at skabe sig en bedre tilværelse. Men Libyen er et land i kaos med et ekstremt ustabilt arbejdsmarked, og det er på samme tid en af menneskehandlens hovedfærdselsårer til Europa. Ustabiliteten i Libyen har direkte konsekvenser for Europa. Mellem marts og august 2011 udviste Mohammed Gaddafis regime 40.000 afrikanske gæstearbejdere. Størstedelen af disse rejste over Middelhavet og søgte asyl i Italien. Efter Gaddafis regime faldt i august 2011, mindskedes flygtningestrømmen for en kort bemærkning. Men det varede ikke længe, før Libyens nye herskere, tre forskellige militser, der ligger i indbyrdes strid om magten, lod den profitable rute til Europa blive genåbnet. Siden 2013 har antallet af migranter, der våger sig ud i de overfyldte både, været højere end nogensinde. I 2014 ankom 178.000 mennesker på denne rute til Italien. Det er især folk fra Eritrea, Syrien og landene syd fra Sahara, der kommer via Libyen. Simis historie, at han bliver fanget af militserne, da han forsøger at krydse Middelhavet, er typisk. Men lige så ofte sker det, som også skete for Sulay. At det øjeblik, immigranterne kommer ud af ørkenen, står militserne på spring for at fange dem. Det er en praksis, der er sat i system, og som giver militserne en stor ressourceindsprøjtning, enten i form af penge eller i form af det slavearbejde, de reelt tvinger folk til at udføre for sig. Hvad også Sulay kom til at opleve.
If you have a talent, like you are amazing, or you are a mechanic, you have a work that they need, they'll take you to outside and go and work for them, then later they leave you. So that's what happened.
Did you have money to pay?
And their cell? No, they took me to a place to work for them. Their car on their cars.
What is your skill? What can you do?
Yeah, I'm a mechanic. Yeah, so they took me there to repair their cars for, I think, 1 month, going to 2 months. Then they left me. But the rest of my friends, they that spent about 9 months, 8 months there, that we met on the road, that they were there. Some of them, when they tried to escape, they just shoot them and kill them. So.
Da den libyske milit fanger den 17-årige Simi, har han modsat Sulay ingen specialiseret arbejdskraft, han kan tilbyde den libyske milit i bytte for sin frihed. Hans familie har heller ingen penge, de kan bruge til at løskøbe ham med. Og dermed lander han allernederst i fangehierarkiet, hvor fængslet risikerer at blive en dødslejr.
I was in prison in Libya, Ansara. So we were in prison. They give us food only once in a day. Only once, only a lunch in a day. So many people die there because of hunger. Many people die there because of they don't have money to pay. If you don't have money to pay, they will catch you there. They will not deport you. And keeping beating you, telling you that call your people to pay money, beating you. Some people die because of that. They used to beat you and force you to call your people to pay money. So if you don't have support, they will continue to beat you until you die there. So if you die, they just carry your dead body. No one knows where they take you. Your people will never see you. There are a lot of people. There are people don't know. Either they die, either they are in Italy, either they are in Libya. They don't know. Even me, my mother was crying. I heard that my mother was crying because of he heard that I was dead. By then I was in prison. She don't know where am I, because I never have called to call her. She don't know my whereabout. You know, Libyan people do this as a business now. Because if they take you to prison, instead of they deport you, they told you, you must pay money, we take you out, or else you will die in this prison if you don't have money. So a lot of people die there because they don't have money, they don't have support.
Can you tell me how you managed to escape from prison?
I just see two Nigerian people break the window. They try to escape and they take the risk. They jump out and I follow them because I don't have money, I cannot stay there. So if you don't pay money, you cannot go out. And if you take that risk, if they saw you, they can shoot you and kill you, because they can shoot people and kill you. So I try that, I take that risk, I follow those people. That's how I escape. So I was following them, you know, I am very young, so they say that I must not follow them because I am a kid. I can afraid and make a noise and they will show them. So they send me out from them. So I go alone until the night come. I sleep in the forest. I wait till the morning. I came out. I just break the taxi. So I ask him if he can take me to home. After I have a friend there, he will give him money because I cannot pay him money. If I pay him money, he will take me and sell me back. That's how they do. They sell people and they have their money. And after the next, the police will ask you to pay money or else you die in prison again. So I don't have phone, but I have number of my friend. So I give that number to taxi driver to call him. And he called the boy and I talked to him that let him bring me. And if I came there, you give him money. If you give him money, after if I work, I can pay your money. So that's how I do. He bring me up to home after my friend gave the driver money. This how I escape. What I do after, I try to follow one of my friend. He go to work after he take me, because you know I cannot do this kind of work. I play only football. So, but he favor me and take me to work and give me some money every day, give me some money. How the money I will eat, and I take some aside so that I can pay and cross, because if you will cross, they charge you.
How much do they charge you?
They charge you 500 euro, just like 1,000 dinar in Libyan money. Some charge you more than that, 1,500 dinar. Even you are running from the war, Libyan people must charge you and you pay. If you don't pay money and save yourself, you will die in the war. That's how they do.
Både Simi og Sulay er nu frie, og efter at have arbejdet i flere måneder, kan Simi betale sin gæld til den ven, der hjalp med at løskøbe ham fra taxachaufføren. Og både Simi og Sulay kan betale det, det koster for at rejse over Middelhavet. Men begge skal først ud i menneskesmuglernes ventebarakker langs kysten. Sulay fortæller.
I was at Tripoli because I live at Tripoli. So they sent a car because me, I don't go out because I'm very afraid of this thing. I don't go out when I'm working. I don't go out, so I don't know anywhere. Always where I'm working is where I'm sleeping. It was not interesting of coming here. No, because.
You didn't want to go to Europe?
No, I was not going to Europe because when I was in Libya, I was seeing every day people are dying on the sea.
People that die?
People are dying, and sometimes maybe when people are trying to cross, when they arrest the people, some of them, they shoot them on the water, they don't bring them back. And some of them, when they bring them back, they put them in jail maybe a year or more than, yeah. So for me, I was not interested, but my friend that I was with was very interested. That he said, let's go, and I told him I'm not going. So he went about 1 hour or 2 hours. He called me again and said, no, I should come and let's go. I said, no, I'm not ready. So he pushed me to have the interest So we came back and they came and took me. We went to the Arab man that there is. It's full of clay. It's made by clay.
A clay hut.
Yeah, a clay hut. Yeah, all those kind of things. But there is something like a cage that when you enter, you cannot go out unless they open it for you. Yeah, so they put us there. For me, we spent only 1 week over there. But there are some people that spent more than a month there. They don't eat good food. Only the bread, the hard bread, and water. Maybe you can even brought you rice without oil, without salt, without nut. You eat it the way you want. That's it. So we spent...
Are there bathrooms there?
It's only one bathroom, and the people over there are more than even 50. They are almost like 60 people, one bathroom. And there's no water.
There's no water?
There's no water, there's nothing. Well, the water that they bring in, like 5 liters gallon water in a gallon that you use, you cannot use it for bathing.
So after a week, they let you out?
After a week, we were sitting down because even for that week, I was very angry because my friend, you know, he convinced me to come with me. And he told me that they are going this night, that I should come. But when I reached there, the thing was different. I was waiting. So I was angry. And I told him, I'm not going anymore. Then going back. But, you know, at the moment you reach in that place, you cannot go back. Because maybe if you go back, and the police arrest you, or they meet you at the barriers, because in that place, in every junction, there's a barrier. Like from here to...
A checkpoint.
A checkpoint. Every place, there's a checkpoint. So at the checkpoint, if they meet you, they ask where you're coming from, you tell them you are from that place. If they are the friends of that, the man that have that place, they will leave you alone. But if they are not his friend, they will arrest you and go and investigate that place. So they don't like people to be going out. So I wanted to go out, but they said no. So I was just there, and the man was saying, "Is the weather is not good, but if we leave us to go, we are going to die, but we shall have patience." After the 1 week that we spent in the place, we were there at the night that he just came and said, "We are leaving today. But we should get prepared. And before you leave, you are not allowed to take anything with you. Not even a ring, you are not allowed to wear." So they just took us in a car, in a Toyota Land Cruiser. And the car was parked behind the gate, in front of the gate. So at the moment you are from the gate, you just go through the car. And if you are doing like you are slowing, you don't want to walk fast, they hit you. And when they come to that place, always they are holding a gun. So they have the power over there because some people can say they want to beat them and go away or something like that. So they, when we, from the car, they took us to the sea. And
how big was the boat that you went on?
The boat was not so big because we were just 33 in the boat. So they asked us to carry the petrol on our head to put it in it. So we took it. But at that point, some people that are afraid say that they don't want to go. But at the moment you reach at the port that they see, there's no turning back. Either you like it or not, you are going. Because they have gone there. And nothing can make you return. If you talk with them tomorrow that you don't want to go, they'll just shoot you and leave you there and go. So for saving your life, you just have to sit down inside. And they will drive you for about maybe 30 or 40 minutes. Him himself, the man, he will drive you about 30 minutes or 40 minutes to go inside a little bit. Then he will jump in the water and swim and come back.
So the trafficker would swim back?
Yeah, he would drive you a little bit further.
Further out, and he would leave you.
Yes, until maybe you know that you are a bit little inside that you can now go. Then he'll give it to the driver. that he's also a migrant, but just can drive a boat. We give it to him, and he would jump in the water and swim out and go back to Libya. So on that end, we are not so lucky, because our boat that he gave us was not a new boat, because it has a leakage.
There was a leakage in the boat.
Yeah, there was a leakage, and about 30 or 40 minutes after he left us, the boat was losing down. It was losing down. So everybody was afraid, and it was in the front of the boat. So all the people in the front were coming back. So the boat was even about to turn. So we told everybody to just calm down, so that, because in that place, in that moment, if there's no cooperation, everything can happen. So we talked to each other, we asked them to everybody. So even we threw our petrol, many of our petrol away, and used the gallon to support the boat, so that it can even help us. So we spent, two to three days, yeah, before we reached here. We were saved. The rescue of Italy came. The captain that was driving the boat called the rescue, and when he called them, they were asking where are we, and he showed them the position that we are standing. So they came, and they rescued us. And there are two women in the boat. One is pregnant and very, very. So they took the pregnant woman first, and the other woman, so left with the boys. So later they took us one by one in their boats, in their ship. They searched us very well, because there are some people that always take some drugs. So that's what they told us. So they searched us and something like that. So we slept in their boat. We slept till daybreak. The next morning, before we realized we were at Lampedusa, we arrived in the morning.
For den 17-årige Simi fra Gambia er rejsen endnu mere dramatisk.
Yeah, the day I tried to cross, they take us and gather us one place away from the town. They hide us there. Sometimes you can stay there for 1 month. Sometimes if they tell you today you people will cross, sometimes the weather go bad. They change their mind that until next week, sometimes you can stay there 1 month, but we stay there 15 days with hunger. Only drink water and eat little food. We cannot afford us. So the day weather was good, and they decided to take us. So if they bring you people at the beach side, they hide you people. They take you in the car and put you people together, lay down so that people cannot saw you. Because sometimes armed robbers can saw you and follow you people. Right?
Who can see you and follow you?
Armed robbers, even the police.
What is armed robbers?
Armed robbers who kidnap people and sell them.
Ah.
Criminals. They can follow you people and try to have some order so that they can take them and sell them. Police also can try to follow you people and catch you and take you to prison, ask money from you people. So that's how they put us and lay on each other. They take us to beachside like that. And if they take us there at the night, around 1-2 at the night, so they try to manage the boat and take you people in the boat. The boat, we can take only 50 people. They take 115, 113, 109. And the maximum should be 50. That's why people die in the sea. Continuously, people die in the sea. Because if boat can take only 50, you put there 100 and something, it will be problem. We all sit, but we were very tired. Sometimes you can see some are crying because they are suffering. People are very tired.
Tired.
Tired, tired, yeah. Together. You see.
And then the boat set out.
Yeah, the boat have problem try to leak. So they said people at backside should come and help them and catch them. And we can people at backside cannot move and come to front side because people are many in the boat. You cannot even wake up. You cannot even move. So how can you come from backside and come front to help? So that was the problem. And others in front side were angry now. They leave the boat. So that's why boat balance.
But they left the boat. In what sense? They jumped in the water?
No, they don't jump because the air hit the boats. And boats balance one side. People try to, people start to fail in the water.
The air, there was a lot of wind.
Yeah, a lot of winds. It was going very nice, but because of people who try to help and catch front side were angry because of they tired. We called the man who pushed us to cross. He never take our calls. After we tried to call Italy, so but the network was very bad. Our phone wasn't good. The phone is not good at all. So if we start to talk to Italian people, the network cut. We never hear each other. After we try to call one of our friend in Italy. One of us have his number and call him. Please, if you have Italian Navy's number, try and call them. Tell them people here in the sea and dying. We don't know where we are. So after he called those people. But before they come, it was around roughly 1 hour we are suffering in that sea. People are dying. People are crying. We were 109 people in the boat. We lost 16 people.
What do you mean you lost 16 people?
Because our boat have problem and the boat fell down in the sea. Some drop in the water. Even me fell in the water, but I can try and swim and come back to the boat. So people who can't swim, they all die. Even the girl was there, die in the sea.
A girl?
A girl, see. She died in the water. So my friend who favored me and paid money to that taxi driver was died in the sea.
He was on the same boat with you?
We were at the same boat.
And he died?
He died in the sea.
How old was he?
No, I don't know his age. Really. It was 7 September 2014.
For Sulla og Simi endte rejsen godt. De overlevede og kom til Europas kyst. Siden den store migration over Middelhavet begyndte, er tusindvis af mennesker omkommet på samme rute. Så sent som i april 2015 gik et stort skib fyldt med immigranter og flygtninge ned. Mange af de fortrinsvis syriske flygtninge havde haft mulighed for at betale ekstra for at kunne sidde på dækket, men størstedelen af de afrikanske rejsende var låst nede i lasten. Det lykkedes kun europæiske kystvagter at redde 27 mennesker, og det anslås, at dødstallet lå på omkring 800. Mænd, kvinder og børn. Vi ved ikke meget om dem, der døde. Enkelte havde navnet på den landsby, de kom fra i Afrika, skrevet på indersiden af deres håndflader. Men i mange tilfælde, især på de små både, har immigranterne ikke mulighed for at kommunikere med kystvagterne i Europa, og derfor synker bådene uden at efterlade sig spor. På trods af, at efterhånden er almen viden, også i Afrika, at Libyen er en dødsfælde, er presset for at slippe væk så stærkt, at flygtningestrømmen fortsætter.
Og det var Nora Agnete Metz, der på vegne af Den Anden Radio besøgte Simi og Suley i en landsby i Italien for at høre dem fortælle om rejsen til Europa.